Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This episode of Groundwire was produced on Anishinaabe Territory, part of the Robinson Superior Treaty, home of the Fort William First Nation in Thunder Bay by Carly Forbes.
We're your hosts, Michael Foldvari
and Patricia Patsy-Liang.
From CJLO, 1690 AM, broadcasting from Concordia University on Mohawk Territory in Montreal.
In this episode, Algonquins of Barrier Lake travel to Ottawa to protect their territory from mining. Trent Radio makes their station more accessible, and this.
I was the baby that was being held in my mother's arms while they were marching on Parliament Hill. I was the one in the protests being passed around the back while my mother was speaking in the Supreme Court.
Politicians were saying that we needed to take care of the Muslim problem, and we're going to do it to protect the gays, which, I mean, as a queer Muslim person, like, it just doesn't make sense.
But first, here are the headlines.
The Kurdish community in Canada has been organizing rallies since November 4th to protest the Turkish government's latest attack on the Kurds and the arresting of 11 members of the Kurdish party. Hundreds of people gathered at Yonge and Dundas in Toronto, City Hall, and at the Turkish consulate in Toronto, in front of the Manitoba legislature in Winnipeg and in Ottawa over the past 2 weeks to protest the arrests of the People's Democratic Party, HDP, MPs, including co-chairs Figen Yüksekdag and Selahattin Demirtas. Arrest warrants have been issued for all 59 HDP MPs whose immunities were lifted months ago as part of the war on civil liberties in Turkey, with the pretext of fighting terrorism. Only 3 days prior to the attack on HDP PMs, the mayors of Diyarbakir, politically and symbolically the most important city for the Kurdish people in Turkey, were also arrested and imprisoned. HDP is a party which earned the votes of at least 6 million citizens in 2015 and is the nation's third largest party. These attacks are considered a continuum of the campaign against the civil rights and liberties of the Kurdish people. Hundreds of people have died and tens of thousands have been displaced due to the military campaign and curfews in the eastern provinces that followed the HDP's electoral success in June of 2015. In addition to this, since the July 2016 coup attempt in Turkey, over 170 media outlets critical of government policies have now been banned. Kurdish, Alevi, and socialist media have been effectively silenced, and just last week, 370 NGOs and civil associations have been shut down. More than 130 journalists are in prison, including some renowned authors and intellectuals. Farhad Sultanpour, president of the Kurdish Association of Manitoba, said,
"We are calling upon the Canadian government to lead the international community in condemnation of these illegal acts, demand the release of the Kurdish MPs, and reinstate the mayors." Gretchen King from CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal brings us this headline from the International Institute of Communications conference held recently in Ottawa.
The Canadian chapter of the International Institute for Communications convened its annual conference this November at the Shaw Centre in downtown Ottawa. The event brought together business and government leaders in broadcasting, media, telecommunications, and technology. This year's theme focused on creating an innovation agenda. Community radio was noticeably absent from the conversation. Groundwire asked one of the panelists, Catherine Canoe, CEO of the Cable Public Affairs Channel, to comment on the value of nonprofit media participating in the conversation about innovation.
I think everybody does bring something to the table. I think it's just a matter of maybe knowing more about this organization and what they do.
The lack of diversity in the room did not escape the Honorable Navi Baines, Minister of Innovation, Science and Economic Development. In his presentation at IIC, he described an innovation agenda that prioritizes equity. Groundwire asked Minister Baines how this should be put into action.
Innovation requires a large talent pool. Good ideas can come from anywhere, anyone. So it's incumbent upon us to include more women, more young people, more Aboriginal people, more people with disability.
Marie-Philippe Bouchard, president of TVSYNC Canada and board member of IIC Canada, agrees this year's conference outcomes present an innovation agenda inclusive of a diversity of Canadians and media organizations.
We were incredibly lucky in Canada because it's very diverse. It's an open system that was very successful. We're in a period of big change, and so we have to be focused on the prize, and the prize is that we have to innovate together.
To view the conference proceedings, search for IIC Canada in the archives online at www.cpac.ca. Reporting for Groundwire, this is Gretchen King from CKUT Radio in Montreal.
The next headline was written by Carly Forbes.
On October 31st, a $600 million class action lawsuit was filed on behalf of civil servants and military members who were dismissed on the basis of their sexual orientation. It's estimated that wrongful dismissals between 1950 and 1992 affected over 9,000 people who were investigated, targeted, sanctioned, and/or were discharged or terminated by the Government of Canada because of their sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. In the 1960s, Pierre Trudeau decriminalized homosexuality, but the government saw LGBTQ Canadians unfit to serve in the military, at the RCMP, and even the National Film Board, the CBC, and the Canada Post. The case is expected to be assigned a judge and begin in court in the next few weeks. MP Randy Bossoneau was appointed the LGBTQ2S Special Advisor to the Prime Minister on November 2nd, and Prime Minister Trudeau is expected to issue a formal apology.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
Sometimes it's easier to walk away like we've never known struggle when we stay. Sometimes
you're listening to Groundwire, available at groundwirenews.ca and broadcasting from your local community radio station.
You just heard Sometimes by Izquay. Now it's time for our feature stories.
Algonquins from Barrier Lake have set up a land defenders camp to protect the land from mining. Darren Sutherland, host of The Circle on CHUO, interviewed Barrier Lake community member Norm Machawan.
We have a camp set up on our territory to oppose the mining that's going to happen in the Parc de la Variandrie, which is three and a half hours north of Ottawa. If this mining comes through, it's going to contaminate our lakes and waters, which connect to the Ottawa River and which will flow down here in Ottawa. It's not only my community or the Algonquins of Barrier Lake that are going to be impacted by this, but, you know, the whole Ottawa River watershed that's going to be impacted. And my community is set up right now to stop the drilling process that's going to be taking place until April 2017. The mining on the territory has been under suspension since 2011.
Oh, wow.
But it was in 2010 we found out through the Mining Watch Canada that there was going to be a potential mining in the territory. So we did check it out right away. We did not waste any time. And when we did check it out, it was in the heart of our traditional territory. And we have a lot of users on our territory, you know, not only us, but we have different communities, our neighboring Algonquin communities that use the territory as well, and the non-native hunters. And, you know, we're trying to preserve the wildlife reserve for all our users. We're not going to let Copper One Company bury our identity alive, you know, because much of our identity comes from the land, our language, our culture, our teachings. It's going to be a huge loss for the community and a huge loss for this country to lose such a great wildlife habitat.
You aren't necessarily opposed to development. You just want it done in a respectful, sustainable way.
Yes. Well, in Quebec, you know, there's no process in place for a consultation with the First Nation community. They just go online and they stake a claim through the Google Earth.
Oh, geez.
And there's no consulting us, you know. And, you know, we would have never agreed anyway, you know, because it was right in the heart of our traditional territory where more than 25 families will be impacted. And, you know, a lot of lakes, a lot of river systems where the sturgeons rely on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the people rely on that, the animals, everything. You know, everybody needs water, including Trudeau and Premier Couillard.
And CKCU's Roots Radio interviewed Chief Casey Ratt.
Basically, right now we have, some families that are camped out near Junction 29, which leads to the where Copper One has a claim on the territory for an 80-kilometer-wide mining activity that they want to, do in our territory. So right now we're trying to make sure that the drilling of the exploration drilling does not happen within the territory for whatever reason. And right now Copper One says the Copper One and MNR have said that there is no drilling at the moment or no permits have been issued. And which is good news for us.
You've a long history of combating resource extraction industries and the province. So, who's all implicated involved? You mentioned Copper One, but is that the only kind of player in this?
Well, right now we have 14 mining companies that want to do exploration drills in our territory. So we're out there making sure that this does not happen. We have people, taking rides into the territory on these locations, making sure that no one is there doing these activities. And if they are found to be at these locations, the community will go over to that place and ask them to leave the territory and making sure that they don't come back in the future because, you know, we don't want no mining in our territory. If there's any mining in our territory, I mean, it's just going to devastate the community because our people still use and occupy the land that is recognized as the trilateral agreement.
Thank you to Braden Alexander for producing that report.
Following the U.S. election, demonstrations have been taking place in cities such as Vancouver and Montreal protesting the election of Donald Trump. CKUT's Jneba Dale recorded a speaker at the anti-Trump demonstration in Montreal.
Among other things, we need to fight for a better electoral system, electoral reform. Trump lost the popular vote and he was still elected president. The Liberals here in Canada don't have the popular vote and yet they form a majority government. So we need to fight for that, both in Canada and the U.S. We need a voting system that actually reflects the real preferences of people. So those are things I believe we can do in the short term. But more fundamentally and more importantly, we need to acknowledge that the values that are at the base of our economic system are the values that determine the ones we have in our culture. There are certain questions we need to ask ourselves. For instance, how do we concretely transition to an economy that is founded on human values? What would that economy look like? And we need to put the intellectual labor towards answering those questions. But we need to remember that the problem is far from being just economic, because the same people that were left behind by neoliberal policies and capitalism in the States are also the same people that agree with Trump when he says that society is too politically correct. These are the same people that think that the Black Lives Matter movement is divisive and needs to stop. These are the same people who don't think that trans people should be able to choose the washrooms that they use. These are the same people who try to defend sexual assaulters. These are the same people who oppose women's reproductive rights. And these are the same people who are scared of immigrants and refugees, largely speaking. So there's many facets to the battle that we have to lead, and it's not just economic. And I think that what is most needed right now is for people to be educated. And it's not my place to tell people to put that labor into doing that, because it does require a lot of intellectual labor and it requires a lot of emotional labor to engage with people who fundamentally disagree with us. And I acknowledge as well that it's hard for a lot of people to even enter those circles and to be taken seriously within those circles.
Co-op Radio's Gunnar G. O'Sullivan spoke with a queer Muslim protester at the demonstration in Vancouver who responded to the Trump administration's proposed database of Muslim immigrants.
As for the anti-Trump rally after the Pulse shooting in Florida, Trump and other politicians were saying that we needed to take care of the Muslim problem, and we're going to do it to protect the gays, which, I mean, as a queer Muslim person, like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, we, the Audre Lorde Project put out a statement around that. I'm just going to read you a quick line to that. They say, the fact that only the race of the perpetrator and not the victims is being discussed is telling. Besides erasing the lived reality of Muslim, LGBT, STG, and C people, Black Muslims and LGBT, STG, and C people of color more generally, this promotes a xenophobic stereotype that Muslim people and immigrants are more homophobic and become radicalized elsewhere. The culprit becomes the figure of the Islamic terrorist, and the heroes become the politicians, the police, and the military. We reject this deliberately racist framing. Individual perpetrators are part of a much larger system of militarization and colonization. We recognize that terrorism is not imported. It is homegrown in a culture that is deeply anti-Black, anti-immigrant, and anti-queer.
So you say no to Trump?
I say no to Trump.
The Motherhood Initiative for Research and Community Involvement, known by its acronym MERCY, held its 20th anniversary conference in October in Toronto. One of the speakers was the outgoing president of the Native Women's Association of Canada, Dawn Mimi Lavelle Harvard, who now prefers to go by the name Mimi. Mimi recalled attending the first Mercy Conference 20 years ago with her mother, Jeanette Lavelle. Lavelle, a lifelong activist, sued to remove the part of the Aboriginal Act that excluded women and their children from status if they married a non-Native man.
In the most traditional form of activism and educating and mothering, I was the baby that was being held in my mother's arms while they were marching on Parliament Hill. I was the one in the protests being passed around the back while my mother was speaking in the Supreme Court. And I grew up in a family where I thought everybody did protest signs and banners for arts and crafts. I have proudly continued this tradition with my own daughters when we were at a protest, actually, last summer, and it was had to be about 45 degrees, and we were boiling out on Parliament Hill. And I noticed my three girls who were marching alongside me, and they're looking at the RCMP cruisers, and I'm worried because I thought they were getting nervous about, you know, the presence of all the police around us, given our histories. And they're eyeing these police cruisers, and they're looking at me like, what's going on? She says, I bet those cruisers have air conditioning.
My name is Fiona Green, and I'm at the University of Winnipeg, and I'm a professor of Women's and Gender Studies.
And you're here at the Motherhood Studies Conference. Tell me about how Motherhood Studies fits into your discipline.
It is my discipline. My PhD research was on feminist mothering. In 1995-96, I began. And I attended the very first conference that Andrea O'Reilly put on in 1997, and I've been a member ever since.
Professor Green credits York professor and Mercy founder Andrea O'Reilly with putting motherhood studies on the map academically. In its 20 years of existence, Mercy has held 50 conferences in Canada and around the world. They publish a biennial journal of motherhood studies, and they also publish books under the label Demeter Press. Green has published three books in the field of motherhood studies.
practicing feminist mothering, maternal pedagogies in and outside the classroom, and chasing rainbows, exploring gender-fluid parenting practices and essential breakthroughs, conversations about men, mothers, and mothering.
I asked Professor Green to explain more about that last title.
Well, it's based on a lot of theories, but in particular looking at Sarah Ruddock's work on maternal thinking. And she argues that the work of raising children, the work of attending to children, preserving them, nurturing them, helping them socialize, be accepted into society, that takes a particular kind of thinking, and that it's not biologically necessary that it's women who do it. We live in societies that structure that women do that. And so the argument in that essential breakthroughs is breaking through the assumption that it's only women who can do maternal work.
There were 155 registered speakers at the October Mercy Conference, and they came from many countries, many fields of study, and many social perspectives. Here are a few examples of topics discussed. Transparenting, neoliberal pedagogies of motherhood, maternal experiences of Bosnian women rape survivors, Aristotle's exclusion of mothers from the political sphere, Canadian newspapers' stereotyping of single mothers, public child care in Finland, mothering's effects on a child's neurobiology, the rhetoric of the breast milk supply, the end of collective child rearing on an Israeli kibbutz, mother artists' rebellions in the UK, the symbolism of mothering a disabled child. For more about Mercy's conferences, journals, and books, visit their website, motherhoodinitiative.org. For Groundwire, I'm Frieda Worden.
Frieda Worden is series producer of WINGS, Women's International News Gathering Service.
Chasing morning skies, look down the road and we drive and drive. The washboard road, the sparkling snow, we squint our eyes. How are we to know? How are we to know? We sip our tea beneath the arbor lights. I light a smoke, you watch it curl and rise. The dancers know which way dust blows. We squint our eyes, we squint our eyes. How are we to know? How are we to know? How are we to know?
Listening to Groundwire, available online at groundwirenews.ca and broadcasting on your local community radio station.
You just heard Sundogs by Tara Williams.
Now it's time for our community radio report. Josh Skinner of Trent Radio CFFF interviewed station staff about improvements recently made to the station to make it more accessible to people with disabilities.
Over the summer of 2016, Trent Radio decided to improve our accessibility to our community broadcasters through the installation of a ramp at the front door and a wheelchair-accessible bathroom. Trent Radio did this because it believes that to be a community broadcasting facility, it has to be available to the whole community. Today, we are joined by longtime general manager John Muir, the summer operations manager during the installation, Haley Raymond, and current Community Outreach and Development Manager Maurizio Interiano to discuss what these accessibility improvements mean to the community.
My name's Haley Raymond, and I'm currently an assistant at Trent Radio just a couple hours a week during the school year. It's a student job. Over the summertime when the renovations were going on, I was also the Summer Operations and Information Manager. Well, over the summertime, we had our bathroom renovated, so we got the doorway to it widened, and we also got things like a lock button instead of, like, you know, so that you have to fidget with. And yeah, it's much bigger. It was, the whole thing was expanded as well as the doorway, so it's become wheelchair accessible. Anybody can do a radio show at Trent Radio. You can come in and you can talk about whatever your passion is, but I mean, the first step to doing that is being able to get in the door and have access to things like, you know, basic things like a washroom. So it's really important that we can facilitate having an inclusive environment and being open to having as many people come to make radio as we can.
This is John Muir about to talk about what accessibility means at Trent Radio.
Barrier-free means autonomous, so you want people to be able to participate on their own steam without having to wait, you know, around for other people to do things for them. It's possible these days, if you have a smartphone, to do a radio show on it and submit it to Trent Radio, and we'll get it broadcast. It's a fairly lonely pursuit. There's something to be said for conspiring with others, or at least even if you're not actually conspiring in terms of your production, but getting ideas, getting encouragement, giving encouragement, that kind of thing. That part of participation, to me, is just as much as part of making a community as are the output of the radio shows. It's almost like a double negative. If you don't have people who are in that situation, then you notice they're missing. If they're there, then you don't notice them missing. So in a way, I want people not to be missed.
My name is Mauricio Interiano, and I am currently the Community Outreach Development Manager. There's a big social aspect to Trent Radio, and I think when people are able to come into the studio and come into the kitchen, they're able to have those social encounters with everyone here. They're able to have a face-to-face conversation with their operators and with other programmers. So just the fact that we have doors that are big enough and open enough for everyone to come in and experience the social aspect of Trent Radio, it's vital to creating community. When you tag a place as being fully accessible, people feel welcome. And I think we've always tried to make Trent Radio a welcoming place, and this will just encourage other people to come here and do programming. So I think that will be very important to really have a diverse programming.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been a production produced in Peterborough's community broadcasting facility, Trent Radio. And if you ever find yourself in town, please feel free to visit us at 715 George Street North. Thank you.
That's it for this edition of Brown Wire, produced on Anishinaabe territory in Thunder Bay.
Music this week was by Is Quay and Tara Williams.
Headlines this week were written by Julia Arick, Gretchen King, and Carly Forbes.
We also thank Greg McDougall,
Darren Sutherland,
Andy Crosby,
Braden Alexander,
Glenn S.,
Josh Skinner,
Ume Salma Ramtula,
Gennarji O'Sullivan,
and Jneba Dale.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station
or download at groundwirenews.ca.